Hello, it's Owen Shehan here from Off The Ball, and the FIFA World Cup 2026 is here. And let's be honest, the matchday version of ourselves can look a little committed. Jerseys, face paint, scarves and questionable weather, whatever you have, maybe even a full costume if your team makes a run, you can look a little worse for wear come the end of it all. But the World Cup, it's not just about the football. It's the atmosphere, it's the nights in the pub, it is the watch parties with your mates, and maybe even meeting someone new. That is where Lynx comes in. As an official personal care sponsor of the FIFA World Cup 2026, Lynx's premium fragrances are here to help you smell your best, even in the middle of full matchday madness. Lynx, smell your best when you look your worst. Now, enjoy your podcast.
Word on the street, on Off The Ball.
With Braeburn, whatever the weather, Braeburn Coffee has you covered.
Made for your summer.
Hello, hello, and welcome along to Word on the Street.
Ja, Klassiker.
There we go.
That's way better.
I will preface this by saying I was in the throes of a fever.
Well, I think it's like the death of football, funeral bell.
This is probably the worst recency bias of all time.
I say Boxing Day.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Is there a problem? Absolutely. Is it shite? Absolutely. Will you watch it? Absolutely.
Hello, Word on the Street, coming at you every Thursday afternoon. I'm Susanna. I'm here with Eve and Rachel. How are we, ladies?
Oh, good, thanks. How are you?
I'm good. I'm really, really enjoying the summer weather.
I am, and it's also nice to all be back in studio.
Oh, yeah.
We had a few kind of enjoying the summer weather, a few episodes kind of outside and a few bits and bobs happening. So it's nice to be back in here chatting away.
That's true. And all three of us, which is rare, given you're in the midst of the hecticness that is GAA summer.
Oh, yeah. In the pits of it, but there's no place I'd rather be.
This might be the last time you see Rachel.
Yeah, I was like to my family, I was like, oh, I might call down on Saturday and then I'll see ye in September.
Perfect. You guys may have heard the start of our sting there. We have a sponsor! Woo! Snaps. Thank you so much to Braeburn. We are actually so delighted. This is kind of hashtag added, but also kind of not, because we love Braeburn coffee.
Yeah, I used to live in Belfast and I would drive up and down the road to Cork, and they were the only places at the time that did oat milk from the garages, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And like, you know, when you're driving that far, you do not want to be bopping off into the hinterlands. So you just want to be going off the motorway into the garages. So yeah, massive slaps for them.
Yeah, no, I'm the exact same. When I have to make a journey down to, I don't know, Limerick or wherever for the rugby, I purposely stop in an apple green.
I love how that's your geography of Ireland. A classic dub. When I have to just go down to like Limerick
or something for rugby.
I mean, close enough. That is down. Do you say go up? No.
Yeah, I would, yeah.
You don't say you go up to Dublin and down to Limerick.
Well, I go up to everywhere.
Okay.
Whereas yeah. I'm from Athlone and I'd say I'd go up to Dublin and down to Galway, which makes no sense because we're all on a level.
No, you go sideways to Galway.
Sideways.
It's just your little hierarchy in your mind that you're thinking there.
Oh God, yeah. Sorry, wow, this is a...
Okay, well, we're all in Dublin now. So when I go down to Limerick or across to Galway, I purposely stop in an apple green just so I can get my oat flat white because it's the best coffee on the road. So, as we said, we're delighted that Word on the Street for a couple of weeks on Off the Ball is with Braeburn. From refreshing iced mochas to smoothed iced oat lattes, whatever the weather, Braeburn Coffee has you covered, made for your summer. Incredible. And our very first sponsored episode is going to be very relatable if you watch Love Island. And maybe if you don't watch Love Island.
Or if you're from Limerick.
It's true.
Keeping on the Limerick trend.
Neither of you have been tuning in this summer. Have you ever watched it before?
Never. No, not my scene.
No.
I totally get it. Like, I understand why people are obsessed with it, but no. And it's like isolating when you don't watch it because you're just standing at groups, at training, in work, and people are talking about it. You know, usually when you follow sport, you've got that like conversational currency because you know everything that's going on in the world. Nope.
Nope.
Not anymore. Nope. So I just kind of stand there and
nod.
Yes. Charlene. Nod. Very good.
No, not very good. She's been dumped.
Yeah. But I enjoyed it nonetheless.
Yeah, it is. We have about a half an hour conversation about it every day in the office that I'm only now noticing that neither of you are ever part of.
No, we're just sitting in the corner like loners. We need to get on this. This is ridiculous.
Don't worry. We have brought in an expert to fill in the gaps in Rachel and Eve's knowledge. We're going to be chatting to Connor Phillips, who was on Love Island last year. He was in a record-breaking number of couples, which he addresses here in a second. Quite funny. But he is still with the girlfriend he left with Meghan a year later. So it shows that love does exist in the villa. It's not all fake, as some people might think. But he is also a former Munster player and an Irish Sevens international, as well as doing a bunch of Irish underage stuff. He was part of the winning under-20s Irish team that won a Grand Slam back in, gosh, I don't even know, 2018, 2019. So really interesting chat with him. And yeah, anything else you guys have to say before we dive right in?
Probably the best first episode we could have had with Braeburn. I was very entertained.
Yeah, he talks about Johnny Sexton in his briefs. So if there was anything to keep you hooked on this episode, it might be that. Okay, well, we'll be back next week, hopefully. But for now, enjoy Connor Phillips. Hello, hello, and welcome to Word on the Street. I actually don't know what's been going on in the sporting world on the street this summer because I'm glued to the TV every night from 9 o'clock watching Love Island. Neither of the two girls here in studio watch it with me. So we've brought in an expert. We've got former Munster Academy and Irish Sevens international with us, but a lot of people might know him from our screens last summer because it's 2025 Love Island contestant Connor Phillips. Connor, how are you?
I'm good. How are you guys?
We're good. Thank you so much for coming on. We're going to have to ask you. We're going to have to ask you first and foremost what you're thinking of this year's Love Island. Have you even been watching it? It's your first season since you haven't been in it.
Yeah, yeah. I think I actually did watch All Stars Christmas, so, or in the New Year. So that was kind of like the first experience of like watching the show that I've been on. But I think this year is definitely, like, it's so weird. I'm kind of like, why are you walking around my house? Why are you in my bed? You know what I mean? So yeah, no, I'm watching it. I'm enjoying it, to be fair. I think it's like interesting being, having been on the inside, knowing how things work, you know, so I might want to scream at someone on the TV and then I realize, okay, look, maybe I understand why that may have happened or whatever like that. So it's interesting.
Is it the same sort of feeling that you get if you're watching a Munster match now from your sofa?
Slightly different. Just slightly, though. But yeah, it's just really strange, to be honest. The whole thing is strange, I think. It's kind of like a social experiment, isn't it? Like, so yeah. There's nothing really normal about it. So yeah, no, it's funny.
Can you tell us, because when we watch it, you're inclined to be negative and think that a lot of the things you are seeing are fake because it's like, oh, it's Love Island, it's a production, they're obviously making it TV. But you were obviously with Meghan on the show and you're still with her a year later. So it's like, okay, obviously not everything is fake that's in there. Could you give us a little bit of insight into, I don't know, just what it's like building relationships in there?
Yeah, it's definitely not fake. and I think you just get, you're so out of it in there. Like, you don't know what day of the week it is. You don't know what time it is. You don't have any contact with your friends and family, you know? So if you're upset, you can't just go and have a pint or like, you know, go to your mom's house or something like that and talk to her about it. So they really kind of do a good job of like cutting you off from everything. So little things in there become the biggest things ever because that's all you're thinking about, you know? And for me, I didn't listen to music for 2 months. Like, it was crazy. And you come out and you see all the news you missed, you know, as in the boys are, and the girls in there, I suppose, are going to be looking at the scores of the World Cup now and stuff like that. So it's just mad when you come out thinking, like, I really have been away for 2 months. But yeah, no, it's not, at the end of the day, it is a TV show, though. You know, you got to remember, like, it is awkward sometimes when you're, you know, first dates are awkward at the best of times, never mind when you have a full camera crew around you. And yeah, it's just like you're just staring at each other for like 20 minutes before you actually are allowed to even start speaking and stuff. But yeah, it's definitely real. You never get told what to say. Everything that's said is coming from yourself. And the feelings you feel are definitely real, you know? And I think that's why sometimes in there people feel a small bit hard done by, because they forget that in the small print, all of this is probably there, but they feel a bit hard done by that, you know, their real feelings like that are, I suppose, developing. But you have to remember you're on a TV show. So, yeah.
Rachel, you would have known Fitzy from the GAA world, not known him personally necessarily, but watched him. Were you surprised when he was announced to be on?
Yeah, it's something I'd love to ask you about, Connor, because I feel like because Greg O'Shea might have set a bit of a precedent, did you find that it was easier to go in because a rugby sevens player had already gone in, whereas Fitzy, for him, even just the reality TV, the TikTok fandom of GAA, it's not as associated with, you know, GAA players as it might be with rugby players. Did you find it was easier because Greg had gone in already?
I think with Greg, we actually went to the same school and we played sevens. He was in sixth year when I was in first year. So like we weren't boys, but like I knew of him, like, you know, he was really cool in school. And then we ended up playing sevens together when he came back from Love Island. So yeah, it probably helped just in terms of, I did give him a message before I went on. It probably helped in terms of like, you know, I was going on a TV show for the first time ever. So just asking him a couple of questions like, oh my God, am I going to have to do this? I'm going to have to do that. What's it like? And he just told me like, look, just be yourself. It's once in a life opportunity. And obviously the fact that you've been asked is like, you know, means you're somewhat of a cool person. So I think that did help. But I think him being on it, I was always going to do my own thing anyway. I always tend to do my own thing. Like my mom didn't want me to go on. Like she was like, no way. And I just kind of had to be like, okay, this is like an adult decision I'm going to make in my life. That my mom isn't behind, but then hopefully afterwards, like, she can be proud of how I portrayed myself on there and how I acted on there. But in saying that, I wasn't surprised with Fitzy when he went on, because I didn't know him. I think we have a few mutuals, but from his social media, like, he's popped up before a couple of times, so I was thinking that kind of makes sense. Only looking back at it now, I've seen that he actually gave me a message a couple of months ago asking about it. And I actually didn't even see it. But yeah, I was thinking that as well, because I suppose rugby is very, it's very like, how do you say it? Especially in Ireland, everyone is kind of doing a similar thing, you know, as in like, if you're standing out and doing your own thing, sometimes it can be frowned upon sometimes, you know, and I feel like that was a decision that I just had to make. But in saying that, I think when Fitzy, I saw that he was going on, I was thinking, okay, the GA is probably even tougher to do that with, you know, it's probably a bit less understanding. It's very, very Irish, obviously. And probably going on a show like Love Island isn't typically something an Irish person would do, especially sports person. But yeah, look, fair play to him. You know, he's made a decision. He obviously saw it as an opportunity, and he weighed it up, and yeah, he's on there and he seems to have found someone that he likes. So yeah, fair juice to him.
Hello, it's Owen Chehan here from Off The Ball, and the FIFA World Cup 2026 is here. And let's be honest, the matchday version of ourselves can look a little committed. Jerseys, face paint, scarves and questionable weather, whatever you have, maybe even a full costume if your team makes a run. You can look a little worse for wear come the end of it all. But the World Cup, it's not just about the football. It's the atmosphere, it's the nights in the pub, it is the watch parties with your mates, and maybe even meeting someone new. That is where Lynx comes in. As an official personal care sponsor of the FIFA World Cup 2026, Lynx's premium fragrances are here to help you smell your best, even in the middle of full matchday madness. Lynx, smell your best when you look your worst. Now, enjoy your podcast.
What have you made of his Love Island journey so far? From someone who's been on the inside.
It's very different to mine.
Yeah, you were on, were you the, you'd been in the most couples ever recorded in Love Island last year, was it?
Yeah.
Actually, it worked out in the end, so maybe that's the path you're supposed to go down.
I thought he was going to see me. I said the blueprint. I was in 9 couples in 7.5 weeks. I left with a girlfriend and everything, you know, but he decided, no, he wants to do it his own way. So he's gone in there. Yeah, it wouldn't be the way I do it. And I just feel like, because you can't get involved in a lot of things that is involved in Love Island if you're like so close from the start. But look, if you like the girl, you like the girl, and she seems to like him, so you know, everyone has their own path. So look, hopefully it works out for him.
Yeah, no, 100%. It'd be interesting to see over the next couple of days with Julia entering the villa. But
Connor, you said there that your mom wasn't too pleased with you going in. Is it a decision that you take lightly, because it's such a big deal and your life is going to change after it, whether you maybe get kicked out after the first couple of weeks or whether you make it all the way to the end? How much thought did you put in, or was it just this feels right, I'm going to do it?
That was the biggest fear, I think. It's like, being the person that goes in for 2 days and then it's gone. And then everyone's this big buildup of you going in, you're doing interviews, process for months. You go in, you make a show of yourself, and then you just you're back where you started, and then everyone just... So that's a worry. Me personally, I didn't actually realize that I would have seen a violin. I know Greg, everyone, it's hard to get away from it. So I knew how it worked, but I did not realize the scale of it. Like, me and Megan were in Paris, we're getting stopped everywhere. We're in LA, we're getting stopped. It's crazy. So that probably caught me by surprise in how, and it's obviously growing, I think, globally, like into just pushing into different countries and stuff like that. But yeah, the decision of my mom was, growing up, everyone would have said it to me, you know what I mean? I was a bit cheeky growing up, and I fancied myself a bit. So I think everyone would be like, oh yeah, he'd be great for Love Island. And I think I would have joked about it to my mother, and she would have just, she wouldn't even entertain it. She wouldn't have laughed. She wouldn't have made any remark, just in case it's given me any bit of a door open that I can kind of say, oh, I'm going in. But then, yeah, eventually I came to it. I was literally texting Greg being like, how did you tell your mom? Because my mom's not going to be happy about this. And he was so nice, to be fair. He just was like, I'll get on the phone with her if you want. I'll get my mom on the phone with her. So he was really helpful that way. Now, I told that to my mom, and she's like, I'm not getting on the phone with him or whatever. So, yeah, I just had to say it to her. You know, it was just because what she was worried for is that, like, many years old, I've worked so hard with the rugby. And, you know, I've sacrificed a lot of things, and I've had a lot of achievements in the rugby. So, and I know she was very proud of it, and she knew how proud of it I was. And I think she was just worried that, well, what's the words she said were like, look, everything you've done in the rugby is going to be on, like, you know, you're going to be known as Connor from Love Island now, you know, and you're not going to be known as Connor who did this, who did that, you know what I mean? And yeah, that was a tough one to kind of weigh up and decide. But yeah, I saw an opportunity, and I had to go against the mammy's word for the first time ever. And look, it worked out. So,
and how long was the process between, like, in terms of getting on the show? Because I think, were you originally supposed to come in as a bombshell, and then kind of last minute, you're kind of coming in from the start?
Yeah. So, funnily enough, they actually reached out to me in 2021. But I just signed my academy contract in Munster, and I was like, again, I had a bit of a mad journey to even get there into that position. So I was like, look, I can't just say I'm going on Love Island now. So then, yeah, that, like, the next few years sort of played out. And then they reached out to me, I think, around Christmas time of 2024. And at this stage, I hadn't gone back into the sevens yet. I was just playing with Terry Nior in the AIL. So I thought, look, why not? Look, it wasn't something I was like, oh my God, like, guys, like, I got asked to do this. I knew my mom wasn't going to be on board. I didn't want to tell anyone, because just in case there's a big rumor that I'm going on and I don't end up going on, it's just kind of embarrassing. So, it started in, I think, around December, January time. And again, it was sort of like, oh, I'll just do it, see what happens. And then I'd get a call back and I'd be like, look, yeah, I'll just do it, see what goes on. And then I was like, you know what? Let me just go the full way, and then at least I can give myself the decision at the end of the day. If they do offer me to go on, if they ask me to go on, you know what I mean? So that's what I did. And then ultimately the decision came and I said, yeah, I'll go on.
You mentioned your bit of a whirlwind rugby journey there. It's something that Eve actually pointed out to us. You've documented on TikTok in like a two-part recently, just explaining your rugby journey and kind of everything that you went through to get to this stage. I was curious, like, why did you decide to do that? Was it literally you were just sitting at home one day and you were like, oh, I just feel like chatting to the camera about this? Or was it something you wanted to get out there, that, you know, you'd had this journey and you'd had this whole career as a rugby player?
Probably a bit of both. I think, you know, it's, again, I've all these sort of, say, followers onto social media and stuff like that. And I think they know me from seeing me for probably 10 minutes each night on in a villa in Mallorca, in nearly in my jocks every night, you know what I mean? So I think I wanted to show that I also have a massive body of work behind me. And I suppose it kind of can show you that, like, if you're able to get to that level, it can say a lot about you in terms of, like, discipline, sacrifice and stuff. And it's just to kind of show people that there's more than just me being on Love Island. And also, I think Yeah, I'm obviously, I don't know what to call it now. I'm a content creator in terms of one of those things anyway. And yeah, my thing about that is like, okay, it's cool. I can put on a cool outfit and put a cool song over it. And people will be like, oh my God, it's cool. But like, what I'm trying to do is to actually give more of me, and it'd probably be a bit more vulnerable. And so people can buy into it a bit more, you know, and kind of understand how the experiences I've had to make me the person I am today. And that was it really, you know what I mean? Just being a bit more open and honest rather than trying to be looking cool all the time. So yeah.
And kind of speaking of being vulnerable, I mean, you talked about you did both of your ACLs and the long kind of rehabilitation that you had with Monster, and maybe thinking, you know, your career in the academy was over, and then COVID happened, and suddenly you have this whole kind of an almost second part to that story. What was that period of time like where you were with Monster in rehab, but not maybe on that kind of contract yet, and then suddenly post-COVID something else opens up for you? Was that a time where you had to make a lot of big decisions for yourself and also for your career?
Yes and no. I think the decisions were sort of taken out of my hand really with COVID, and it was sort of like, look, I've nothing else to do but really make a go at this. I think it's tough, yeah, because I was, being fully honest, I think I was earmarked as quite young, from when I was quite young, as being, you know, a good talent, I suppose, or having potential. And being fully honest, I think, yeah, I wouldn't say it got to my head. I just think I never realized the extent that I would need to work in it, for want of a better word. You know, I got to where I was probably just all off natural talent. And it's definitely, I don't have many regrets. It's probably a regret that I have that I never, you know, gave it 100%. But it's worked out the way it is, the way it has. And I'm really happy with how it's going. But yeah, I think at that time period, I just played in the under 26 nations. We just won the Grand Slam with the team with like Ryan Baird, Craig Casey, Ben Healy, Harry Byrne, all these like really players that have gone on to do sick things since. And I think it was around that time period where I was just like, oh, I don't know if I'm on that level, you know. And I feel talent-wise, maybe for another couple of months I can stay there, but I don't probably want it as much as these guys. But at that time, I'm 19, I've kind of sacrificed a lot to be in the position I am, and then to only realize at that time that, oh, I don't know if I really want this. It's quite tough because I can't turn around to everyone and be like, well, you can, but I think as an inner pressure inside you as a 19-year-old, I can't really turn around and tell people, oh, this, I want to do it or something else, or I want to do this, I want to do that. And because I didn't have a definitive thing that I wanted to do, it was like, you know what, I'm good. I'm probably not going to be the best. It's a good way of making money. My mom is really proud of it. I'm really proud of it. It's cool to be good at rugby where I'm from. So let me just continue with this. And I think as the time went on, it really came to fruition that, you know, it separates. To get to that top level of professional sport, it needs to be your life. Like, you need to eat, live, breathe the sport. And I think I just didn't have it. I didn't have that passion for it, even though I love rugby. I've gotten more into rugby since I finished, you know, listening to podcasts all the time, watching every match, you know, whereas when I was part of Munster or whatever, I would train. If we're playing Toulouse, and obviously we're being the opposition team, so I'm a winger, so they could be like, you're Cheslin Colby for the week, so I'll need to play like Cheslin Colby. And then I wouldn't even watch the game on the Saturday. So I'd be training all week to try and prepare them. I wouldn't watch the game on the Saturday, and I'd actually just really see it on the Monday morning in the review. So I just didn't have that love for it. And I think I was doing myself a disservice staying in it when I wasn't fully into it, and other people in the service as well. So it sort of just worked out, or it's just panned out. Then I just sort of didn't get a contract. So yeah.
Hello, it's Owen Shehan here from Off the Ball, and the FIFA World Cup 2026 is here. And let's be honest, the matchday version of ourselves can look a little committed. Jerseys, face paint, scarves in questionable weather, whatever you have, maybe even a full costume if your team makes a run, you can look a little worse for wear come the end of it all. But the World Cup, it's not just about the football. It's the atmosphere, it's the nights in the pub, it is the watch parties with your mates, and maybe even meeting someone new. That is where Lynx comes in. As an official personal care sponsor of the FIFA World Cup 2026, Lynx's premium fragrances are here to help you smell your best, even in the middle of full matchday madness. Lynx, smell your best when you look your worst. Now, enjoy your podcast.
Why do you think you didn't want it in the way that you said that those like top athletes need to just, it needs to drive them in like every waking moment? Was it just that it was too all-consuming?
No, I don't think it was too all-consuming. I think I definitely, there was times where I loved it. So I don't think it was that. I was used to, since I was 15, playing like Munster 18s, I'm used to just it being my whole life. But I just had other interests, you know, and I felt like I always, it was probably seemed like I was a bit of a, I wouldn't say rebel, but I just liked to do things differently. And I feel like in that environment, it wasn't received that well. And I was probably me being confused, me growing up and maybe making mistakes and making wrong decisions, and then a mixture of people maybe not understanding me fully. I felt like I could never really be myself in the rugby environment. You know, I love dancing, I love singing, I love, you know, just fashion and stuff. And it's just all things. Now, Azeez is a great help when he came back to Munster, because that was at a time where I was really kind of thinking, like, you know, I don't really know. And then Zeebs came back and it just lifted the mood completely. And it was just someone always joking and someone always dancing, someone taking the piss out of all the lads who are normally really serious and stuff. And it was just really good to see. So that did kind of make me think, okay, well, maybe there is a place for me in this environment. But I think as time went on, accumulation of different things. And then, yeah, I was just like, you know, I genuinely just don't think this is for me.
Do you think we need to work to help to create a space for players like that? Like, it reminds me of Dennis Rodman in The Last Dance. You know, they were like, go and do your own thing as long as you're playing your best. You see Henry Pollock thriving over in England. Do you think if it was more acceptable for you to say, yeah, I'm all in here, but I have other interests, and there, you wouldn't be putting the pressure on yourself to be as fanatical as everyone else? Do you think there needs to be a little bit of wiggle room?
I don't know. I think it gets to a stage then where it's just like, what way do you want the game to go? You know, do you want the game to stay as the clubs are the main thing and then you just have players that play for them? Or do you want to move it like an NBA or like a soccer thing where it's like you actually follow the player and that's why you like the club? So I think that's the question I think that would probably need to be asked. But yeah, definitely. It's just like you can see. You see the French, you see the English now getting better at it, you see down in New Zealand, Australia, you know, those players are probably, you know, if they score a try, they have a little dance because they're happy and they celebrate it, you know what I mean? And I think that it's literally what I'm saying. It just depends where you want the game to go. Do you want the game to be like that and to get into that? A lot of people would say no. So, you know, fair enough. People like the game rugby because it's an old traditional game with traditional values. So yeah, it just depends. But I think, yeah, growing up for I suppose in the sport, yeah, I didn't feel like I could fully be myself all the time. But I think that was probably a mixture of me being young and probably a bit of an idiot as well. So but then I felt like when I went to Terranure, I joined Terranure when I left Munster in 2023, and that was the first time where I was really out of my comfort zone, because I didn't really know anyone on the team. And like from day one, they realized the type of character I was. They realized that, you know, I'm going to be rocking up to training with my cap backwards. I'm probably going to be wearing fluorescent pink boots. I'm probably going to be, and like, they're just like, cool, look, as long as you do what you need to do on the pitch, that's it. You know what I mean? And that's what I think helped me do well at Terranure and really enjoy my time there. So yeah, I think that's just, it depends what way you want the game to go.
I do think, like, we're seeing it shift slightly in other countries, as you mentioned, and Ireland has been slow to change. Like, you look at Bordeaux after they won the Champions Cup, and they have some massive figures in Mathieu Jalibert, who's, like, on TikTok all the time, and he's got a bit of that flair. And then look at the crowds that they're attracting in Bordeaux and their Up and Bus tour. Like, we don't have that quite yet to the same level, and I certainly think it'll be interesting over the next couple of years whether we do see a shift a little bit in Ireland. But I think, as you said, Connor, it's kind of like traditionalist versus a modern era of rugby. Like, which way is it going to go?
Yeah, but I think then at the end of the day, when it gets to that, like, it is a business at the end of the day. Mm. So you need to be trying to maximize the potential, the revenue potential in that business. So, you know, you're looking around at the grounds in Ireland, in the URC, there's a lot of empty seats there every week. You know what I mean? So I think if it's an angle you can take, like I still talk to a good few of the boys in Munster, and I always, of course, me now, but I'm always encouraging, boys, document your day, show people what you eat, show people how a day goes, you know what I mean? And like, I can see that they want to, and some of them will be really good at it, but they're like, if I'm not playing well, and then I'm putting up a day in the life, what way is that going to look? Mm. Or if I'm showing people, and it's the fear of external people thinking, oh, this, whatever, rather than trying to grow your personal brand. And still, just that does not take away from anything you're doing on the pitch. It's not making you less of a teammate. So yeah, it's just interesting.
Yeah, I think it would be huge for the clubs, as you said, for the support they get. I mean, we see it in the women's game. People are going to watch players almost, and they're gaining rugby fans. You mentioned Munster. You've still got a couple of mates there. What have you made of the whole season? I mean, obviously they saved it in the end with making knockouts and then into Champions Cup rugby next year, but it has been a bit of a whirlwind.
Yeah. I feel for the boys, because I think it's just fickle, isn't it? Like sport. I think the start of the season, everyone were like, oh my God, like who is this monster? Like they're whatever. I think they went 4-for-4 or something. And then I remember talking to Craig and it's just like 2-3 games later. And then it's, you know, it's the worst thing in the world. You know what I mean? What are we going to do? So it's just, that's just sport, I think. Yeah, they've had a lot of change. And I think people coming and going and stuff like that. And it's always hard to get in a rhythm of any sort when that's happening, you know what I mean? But they still pulled out a couple of unreal results this season, you know, throughout all that. And yeah, like what you said, managed to turn it around when it came to crunch time. I mean, not in the way they would have wanted, but there's a lot of young players there as well, you know what I mean? There's a lot of boys coming through and they've had a lot of turnover in the last couple of years, like a lot of experience gone, like with Earl ZZ, Conway, Pete, Murray, Kilcoyne, like all the boys, like that's a lot of experience. And even from being in there, those lads would have led the weeks, you know, and those lads would have had a big influence. So it's always going to take a bit of time. There's definitely like new candidates for guys coming through, leaders and stuff like that, who are definitely starting to find their feet now. So hopefully now next season they can have a better run at it.
Connor, as someone who made the move from Munster up to Leinster, what do you make of the news of Raj being in the mix for the Leinster job?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. She's gone full fire.
I think it's just like that, isn't it, in sport? I think coaches kind of get a bit more leeway than players, because you saw it with, like, say, Felix working with England. So, you know, that's just the way it is. And I suppose, like, think of all the Leinster players that have come down and played for Munster. So that's just, yeah, it's just, it's good to see though as well in the same breath, you know what I mean? It'd be good to see him back in the country and having a positive impact, I suppose, on Irish rugby. So he's probably only really see it as a positive.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. Sorry, Eve, did you have a question?
Yeah, I was just about to say, what's your kind of relationship like now with watching rugby? Are you still kind of, I mean, you're speaking there about Munster season, you're obviously really locked into it. I know you'd mentioned before that your mum is a huge rugby fan, and in that video on TikTok you posted, you said that when you made your debut kind of against Zebra down in Cork, that she would have been there anyway, but now she was there watching you. Like, what's your relationship like with watching rugby nowadays? Can you watch it with a smile on your face?
Yeah, 100%, 100%. And I think that took me a while, definitely, because the first thing, like, it's interesting, like, when I left Munster, I thought my world was ending. And I thought that, you know, this is my whole personality. You know, everyone who meets me is how you get on with the rugby. If I'm ever meeting old friends or family, even if people are meeting my mom, they're, how's Connor getting on with the rugby? And then that was gone. And I was definitely, I didn't feel hard done by, because I could see it coming, but it's just never nice, I suppose, when you're getting told that you're being let go, I suppose. So I took a good few months where I needed to just a break from rugby completely. I'd been nonstop since I was, I think, 15 years old, like no Christmases, no summers, no nothing, you know what I mean? Just constantly, like no, just nonstop until I was 23. So yeah, I can watch rugby now. I think I had to get out of Limerick though. because I was like, I can't be walking down the street and seeing all the boys in the new kit and, you know, just walk past them. That was just me. And I know it's petty, but I was like, I need a new start, a fresh start. And then as time came on, it was just, like I said, it was just interesting that, like, I hated talking about rugby or anything to do with rugby when I was involved in it, you know. And it's when I got home with my friends on the weekend or something, they'll be like, oh, what's going on with this injury? Or is he going to play? And I'd be like, boys, please, can I just have a minute away from it? But now I love chatting about rugby. I love watching it. I'm listening to podcasts. Yeah, as you say, I'm locked in with the results and stuff like that. Yeah, I'm always watching. Like, if I can't catch a match, like, I'll be watching all the highlights on YouTube and stuff like that. So, yeah, it's kind of giving me that spark of, like, why I actually liked rugby in the first place.
Do you feel there's a bit of unfinished business there between you and rugby?
Oh, well, I am back in the gym now in the last couple of weeks. So now I'm thinking, I don't know. It's crazy because, like, I'm only 26, haven't played rugby for a year. But where am I going to go? You know what I mean? But the sevens was probably the ideal scenario. And I think this is, like, when I was doing the whole Love Island, like, process, it was with an eye on, like, I love the sevens. It's very taxing and consuming, but not like Munster would be, or, you know what I mean? So I was thinking maybe I can do both. I know Greg came back and did both. And then obviously with the sevens being gone, then I was kind of like, I've had a few offers from clubs over here in, like, the championship and that one and stuff like that. But I don't know if I have the time to give to it at the moment. And if I'm playing rugby, I want to be able to do it to the best of my ability and 100%. I don't want to be, you know, there for 2 weeks and then missing 2 weeks because I'm at an event or a photo shoot or something stupid like that. So I think, look, we'll see. Never say never. Like, but yeah, it feels a shame though that I'm so young, I suppose, that, you know, you do all that and then you just kind of stop. But yeah, we'll see.
Yeah, never say never. It's a pity there's no sevens to get involved in, even on an ad hoc basis. It must have been so weird for you, like, coming back from LA, I presume, last year, sevens is cut, and then a couple of weeks later you're on Love Island. Did you even have time to process the whole thing? Like, did you kind of have any opinions on what happened and how it went down?
Yeah, I think I didn't get back into the sevens until February 2025. So I've been in there around 2021, 22, and then took a couple of years out. And then I was obviously just living in Dublin. I was playing well in the AIL. So I came back in February 2025. And at that stage, I think I'd maybe had the initial call with Love Island, but nothing was set in stone again. So I was thinking, oh, this is probably not going to have any substance to it. So then went back. I went to Vancouver. I went to Hong Kong, Singapore. And as you said, LA. Now, the whole time I came back, so it was February, I think players kind of had an idea of what was going on. Now, there was still hope, and we were still told, you know, perform in this tournament, you give yourself a chance. Perform in this tournament, you give yourself a chance. So that's what we did. I think, like, we pulled out in Singapore. I think that would have been only a couple of weeks before it was announced. I think we beat France, who just won the Olympics the year before. Did we beat New Zealand? I think we came close anyway, you know. So we had, we didn't have an experienced team. It was a young team trying to find their feet. I think obviously it was the year after Olympics, so it was being seen as a development year. And then halfway through the season, we get told, if you don't perform and if you don't finish here, you're gone. So it wasn't, I suppose, ideal. But I think for me, I was devastated, but I don't think I can say I was as devastated as the boys who've been there from the start, you know, as in, because that's an incomparable, like, the amount they sacrificed and the amount that they put on the line and, you know, building that up from the ground, like, they were playing tournaments against teams like Kazakhstan and stuff like that, and from 10 years beforehand, and then to build it up to a finished third in a World Series, or I think the second or third in the World Cup, they finished second in one of the tournaments, you know. And it's just like, Ireland were seen as a good team on the series, and a sticky team and a hard team to play against, you know. And yeah, look, it's obviously the powers that be. It's above all of our pay grades. We don't really have too much of a say. We just kind of have to roll with the punches. And yeah, like, I think those lads, like, yeah, have been there from the start, like, built it up from the ground. it's heartbreaking for them. And I think I was more heartbroken for them. And then look, as it would have us, at that moment, I was kind of thinking things are heating up here with Love Island. I don't know what's going on with the Sevens. So look, I'm just going to have to see how it pans out. And then look, the stars kind of just aligned that the Sevens was gone. Not the stars aligned, that sounds bad, but it's sort of the Sevens was pulled from under our feet. So then I was just like, look, I have this opportunity here. You know, I don't know what I'm going to be doing next week or a couple of months. I'm going to have to start from scratch. So this is probably giving me a good opportunity, you know, to just jump onto this. That's what happened. So it was a mad couple of months, you know, between being in LA, then being in that meeting when we were told that it was going to be done. And then from getting on a flight to Mallorca. Yeah. And like you said, I wasn't meant to be in there from the start. So had I known, I wouldn't have went to Forbidden Fruit on the Saturday and Sunday and then had to fly on the Monday. It was a whirlwind.
Had you planned to come back to the Sevens? Like if it hadn't have been cut, would you have done what Greg did, maybe gone on Love Island and then probably come back to rugby?
Yeah, it was definitely in the realm of possibilities. Now, I didn't know, like, again, it's tough because, like I said, with the social media stuff like that, I think in terms of what I want to do, there's probably more opportunities in the UK. And then obviously I didn't know who I was going to meet, if they would have wanted me to come to the UK. I didn't know what the state of the Sevens is going to be like. Would I still want to go back and play Sevens? But it was 100% in the realm of possibilities, you know, and I think even doing the social media, like if you're traveling the world playing rugby tournaments, exactly what I was saying, that I think the boys, some of the lads like who are playing 15 should document their journeys a bit more. That was kind of something that I was kind of thinking I could do, you know. I can be this player that plays on the World 7 Series, and you know, I can also do social media and it will also help. There'll be a big crossover in terms of I'm traveling all the time and I'm probably doing a couple of cool things that people would be interested to see. So that was kind of definitely in the realm of possibilities, yeah, but unfortunately it didn't work out.
You spent so much of your life going from like the Munster Academy when you were only a teenager, then playing with Munster and the Sevens. You go into Love Island, which is also like a real controlled environment. How have you managed since leaving the villa, say, and not being involved in professional rugby? It's almost like you probably have all of this freedom all at once. What do you do with it?
I don't know what to do with myself, honestly. I've got all this time. I don't have anything scheduled. I'm only joking. But yeah, I went from, I'd say at the age of 15, having every day, every week, every weekend mapped out for me 6, 7, 8, 9 months in advance, you know? So it was a thing where now I've come out and I've really had to put on my big boy shoes and be like, okay, I'm in a new country. I'm in a new relationship. Well, not as new anymore, but I am walking to the shop to get a Lucozade and people are stopping me for photos. And I'm like, this is mad. I think with me as well, I think a lot of people that do go on that show want to get into social media or they're already doing social media. The only photos I would have gotten were being after the in the pub after a game, like 10 of us in the photo with a few pints, you know what I mean? So it was a big learning curve for it, but I think I knew it was something that I really, really wanted to do. And I actually do find myself, I have a passion for it. And it sounds so crazy, but I think I said it in that video, if you asked me, you know, would you trade what you're doing now to kind of go back to the rugby? I wouldn't. And then, you know, so that fills me with some, that makes me content, I think, in all the decisions I made. But yeah, it's been crazy. And I think it's been good having Megan, I suppose, because I'm hearing an Irish accent every day. So it's good having her and obviously navigating this whole thing together. I don't think you can ever really get used to that sort of thing happening to you overnight. I haven't even been back to Limerick that much because the couple of times I have been back, I've been a bit crazy. The thing is that like in Limerick and I suppose Ireland, like when you're walking, people will stop you and be like, oh, how are you getting on? How was the wedding last week? And I'm looking at them like, I don't know you at all. You know what I mean? Whereas I think in the UK, it's more so can I, or like just talking about Love Island, can I get a photo or something like that? And they'll be gone. So it's nice, though. It's nice going back to Ireland and stuff like that. So, yeah, I think I might come back for the All-Ireland final as well. So that should be fun.
Who are you going to be rooting for? Who do you want to be?
Limerick, of course. Limerick, of course.
Oh, God.
That was the question.
There we go. Right answer.
That's a funny one, because I feel like with sports people in Ireland, we're actually quite inclined to be like, no, I'm not going to go near you, because it's almost like not accepted for you to go up to like a Johnny Sexton and be like, can I take a photo with you? Because you're scared of annoying them. But with the likes of you or Megan or somebody who's been on Love Island, for some reason, it feels more acceptable to go up and be like...
Yeah, you know what it is? It's because it's like the show is made for you to feel like you know the person.
Mm.
You know, and that's why they show you, like, you don't see Johnny Sexton chatting in bed. You know what I mean? You don't see any of them on first dates. You don't see any of them, you know what I mean? Like crying over something or maybe feeling really happy over something. So when you see someone go through all those emotions, you feel like you know them, you know, and I've done it before as well, you know, as in when we came off the show, me and Megan watched Love is Blind. And then we ended up like talking to the two people who we were watching on Love is Blind. And I was just like, this is mad, because I feel like I know you. And that's, I suppose, the feeling that some people may have when they see us. So, yeah, it's just you're more accessible, I think. And I suppose when we do social media, like I did that video about my journey and stuff like that. So I'm openly being vulnerable and letting people in. So it's only natural for people to think they know you.
Yeah, that is the dangerous thing about Love Island as well, though, because you think you know them, but then you're actually only getting the snippets that the producers want you to see. I want to get your opinions on the rest of this Love Island, but I do have one other question. Back in Munster, you've obviously said that maybe when you were let go of the academy after the third year, that it made sense, the time was right, and look how it's worked out for you. But when you were let go of the sub-academy way back when you were a teenager and you were still playing with Ireland under-20s, you had just done your ACL, but at the time you were doing really well from a rugby sense. It strikes me as mad that they would let someone go from the sub-academy who is getting selected to play for Ireland at that level. And it's a criticism I see of Munster quite often just online that, you know, they had something like 8 players in the under-20s in this current championship in Georgia. But how many of them are we actually going to see on the pitch in Munster next year? And I'm just curious from your perspective of your time in the academy, of your time in terms of young players getting opportunities there. Is that something, and I know you're not going to go and shit on Munster, obviously, but is that something that they're slow to do compared to, say, a Leinster who are forced into it because half of their team are gone every international window? Or like we're seeing with Lancaster up in Connacht, he's willing to give young players a go and a chance?
Yeah, I think, now I can only speak from my experiences and when I was there.
Mm.
Like, I think we did all have the lads in a similar position, or same age or same academy or sub-academy, we do think that it's probably harder to get a game at Munster than some provinces. Now, for me in that instance, I think it was actually made sense because you had like Zeebs, Conway, Earlsey, Liam Coombs, Calvin, Shane Daly, Mike Haley. So I'm thinking, look, I'm going to need a miracle to be able to play a game here. But it was true, you know, and I think as luck would have it, like 18 months later, all of them were gone. So I was thinking, if I had stayed another year, I'd have been flying. But yeah, I do think it's like, look, Leinster obviously have that excuse of like people are playing international, so it frees up a lot of spaces. And probably Munster aren't getting that quantity of selection anymore for the national team. So it probably does keep that backlog of young people getting the opportunity. But yeah, I think like you see it in France, you see like these guys playing under 20s, they have 50 caps in top 14, or you see with England, you know, like people have played, like when we played England, Marcus Smith, I think, had played well over 20, 30 times at Harlequins in the under 20s. You know, when you had Ted Hill, who played with England in the Autumn Internationals the year before, and then in February was playing the 26 Nations. So I think for us, that seemed like it was kind of impossible. It would be an impossible thing to do. You know what I mean? But then, look, I think it's just the question is if the talent's there, you know what I mean? I haven't been too locked in terms of like the younger age groups the last couple of years. They're seeing I'm only really watching a game on a Saturday. So, yeah, look, it's probably something that should be spoken about if the talent's there and they can't get through. Mm. But, yeah, no, it's just one of those things, unfortunately. I think it's just circumstantial, I think, and then maybe probably yeah, just need to back young fellas, you know what I mean? Let them express themselves, let them make mistakes, let them have bad games. You know, I feel like even in my instance, I played a game against Ebre, did decent. I played a game against Connacht. It was probably one of the worst games I've ever played a game. In my life. And I can admit that now. But yeah, I suppose that was it then for me, you know, yeah. And it was gone. So, it's sport, it's a business, it's fickle. It's just interesting.
Yeah, and of course, and I get that it's sport, but like, do you think it's something that's almost a little bit entrenched down in Munster that they're a bit nervous to give young lads a go? Like, I'm just looking at it objectively, not being on the inside at all, not knowing what's going on, but you do compare it to some of the other provinces, and as you said, it looks like it's harder to get a game, but I just wonder why that's the case.
Look, I think if it is the case, it has to be a good reason. I doubt the reason is I don't want this young fella coming through and reaching his potential. You know what I mean?
Course, like,
so
yeah.
It has, yeah. So there has to be a reason that has something behind it. You know what I mean? So I don't know though. Honestly, I'm too far removed from it now, so I just have to watch it like you guys. And again, when I'm speaking to the boys who I did play with Munster, who still play, I try not to speak about rugby, and we just catch up and see how each other are getting on and stuff like that. So,
no, that's fair.
I was going to ask, Conor, you said growing up playing rugby in Limerick was probably, you know, the coolest thing to do. And we mentioned the Limerick hurlers there. Do you think the hurlers have taken over in Limerick? Whereas playing for Munster probably would have been the coolest thing you could have done at the time. But
it's not cool anymore.
Now being a Limerick hurler maybe trumps that.
Yeah, probably. You know what I mean? I suppose it's a natural thing, isn't it? Like, because Munster were the Munster that we probably remember, you know, growing up in 2006, 2008, or winning the Magnus League in 2010, 11, I think. So, yeah, that's the Munster that we all sort of grow up watching, you know what I mean? And that makes us fall in love with the sport and the club and everything like that. And I think it just happens then. Like, what, how many titles have Limerick won since 2018, and they could win another one in 2 weeks' time? So if you're 8, 9 years old thinking, what sport do I want to play? You know what I mean? You want to play the sport where the team is winning. So yeah, there's probably a shift. I actually haven't lived in Limerick in 3 years. So I don't know the what all the young cool people are doing these days. It's just natural, I think. Yeah, that probably is seeing a shift. But then again, I think it's always the one it goes back to, is that you can make a living playing rugby. So I think that's a bit of something, you know, that people need to juggle when they're making those decisions. And you've seen like Ben O'Connor, Patrick Campbell and stuff like that have all converted from the hurling to the rugby. So, yeah.
Yeah. We've kept you for almost 50 minutes, so before we go any further, I do want to ask Charlene. I don't know if you know her, but she was dumped 2 nights ago. We're still recovering over here in Ireland. What did you make of that? Not to pivot, sorry, complete topic change,
no,
back to Love Island.
But
you have to get your opinion on that.
This is my expertise now. I do know Charlene. We're with the same management, so we're the same manager. Charlene's lovely. I think she got dealt a raw deal, I think, going in Casa. Because I think just us being Irish, but also, like, Charlene's quite reserved when it comes to Love Island, you know, because people who go on there are very, their personality multiplied by 10. So it's tough, like, and I think she just went for who she wanted, and it didn't work out, and it's just unfortunate. I think she probably would have had a better run if she was in there a bit earlier and she had a bit more time, because I know myself, it took me about a week to properly settle in. Like, I was just so worried about like what my mother was going to think. I was like, oh my God, like, no one here likes me. I'm like, I remember on the first night looking in the mirror being like, oh my God, what have I done? But you like, when new people come in, then you're not the new person anymore. And you know, you get a bit of time to acclimatize, but she didn't really get that, and she was really thrown in the deep end, so I'd say it was quite overwhelming. So look, she didn't find love, but she got nice few Instagram followers, didn't she? So I think it's a win.
I feel like we didn't get to see her personality at all, like you said there. Like, she was just upset about the Cavs situation. Sorry, I'm going really deep into Love Island here now.
I love it.
She was upset, and then, yeah, she just, we didn't get to see the kind of personality we know she has. Well, I don't know her. I'm talking, this is what you guys do with this show. I feel like I know her through her TikToks.
Especially with Charlene, yeah, I think she's really good at letting people in and giving her personality and being vulnerable. So I've heard that from loads of people, especially in Ireland, being like, it's so weird watching because I feel like I know her. Feels like it's one of my friends has gone in. But yeah, she didn't get the time in there. And I think, luckily enough, I was in there from the start, so I could kind of see how it worked. And I think after the first person got dumped, made me really think, I can't mess around in here. As you could probably see, I wasn't messing around. So yeah, like you don't know, like literally you could be in the pool having fun and next thing you get a text and you're going home. So you really need to utilize the time you have in there. And I think, but that took me a bit of time to actually realize. So, and I think Charlene's first time being on a TV show, I think. So it's tough. And I think if you could go back, there's always things that you would probably, do different knowing that with that inside information. But like she had a lot, and also the amount of hype she had of her going in,
yeah,
like that was the most I think ever for a bombshell ever. So she's probably feeling a bit of that pressure as well, and she's probably coming in to try and rob the head girl's fella. So it wasn't the easiest of tasks, but no, she carried herself well. She never lost her character, she never lost her cool, she spoke really eloquently. So yeah, so she did herself justice and a good job.
The head girl is funny. Queen Bee Jasmine.
So speaking of kind of a hype heading in somewhere, you've pegged Limerick to win the All-Ireland hurling, but who are you betting is going to win this season of Love Island?
Oh, that's a tough one because there's not a huge amount of like really, really secure couples, but I think if I was going to put money, I would say Ellie and Finley.
Woo!
I just think Ellie's cool, and I think she's very relatable, and I think genuine, and I think people, you know, she likes to lose her cool and roar and whatever, and I think she's just emotional, but I think a lot of people can actually relate to that. But she's also like really good morals, good values. She seems like a cool girl, and then Finley's just kind of come in bit more reserved, bit quiet and stuff like that, but they make each other really happy and it seems real genuine and nice. So sorry about that one, Fitzy, but
our producer Brona is celebrating in the box. I think we've got a lot of Ellie and Finley fans over here. Connor, thank you so much for coming on and being with us for so long. We're sorry we kept so much of your time.
it's good, it's fun.
All right, amazing. Well, we're going to see what happens in the All-Ireland final with Connor's rugby career and then also the rest of Love Island 2026. But we'll be back next week with more Word on the Street.
Word on the Street on Off the Ball.
With Braeburn. Whatever the weather, Braeburn Coffee has you covered.
Made for your summer.
Hello, hello, and welcome along to Word on the Street, Der Klassiker.
There we go. It's way better. I will preface this by saying I was in the throes of a fever.
Well, I think it's like the death of football, funeral bell.
This is probably the worst recency bias of all time.
I say Boxing Day.
Oh, Jesus Christ, Eve.
Is there a problem? Absolutely. Is it shite? Absolutely. Will you watch it? Absolutely.